Now we're going to do a few case studies with Katie.
All right, so I've tried to put together a few fun cases for the panel here. So we'll get started hot. So first, there's a 32-year-old woman with alcoholic pancreatitis who had had disease for several years. She presented with abdominal pain as her primary factor, but she also now had PO intolerance and had had some weight loss. She was jaundiced, her bilirubin was 1.8, and she was malnourished when she presented with an albumin of 2. And so here is her initial CT scan. Hopefully it'll go through. A little slow. So you can see she has some dilated ducts there, and a dilated main pancreatic duct, and a large pseudocyst there on the head of the pancreas, and some stone disease, and a dilated duodenum as well. So who wants to start with that one? Bill, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm going to be a disaster in this room, I have to admit. I've been working with this disease for about 35 years, so I have a few comments to make. No one can leave the room without knowing that if you have conventional chronic pancreatitis, which is what I call it, which is a dilated duct with stones, there's no question that the operation to be done is a bigger or is a Fry procedure. There's almost no place for a Whipple, very honestly, and loss of function is rare, and the outcomes of 70 to 90% success rates for getting rid of pain is been established for decades, so that is a right answer. For this patient, I actually have a separate paper looking at ductal drainage alone for patients with associated chronic pancreatitis and a pseudocyst. You don't have to worry about the cyst at all. If you drain the duct, the cyst goes away. So I would do a drainage procedure.
So you're going to do a drainage procedure right away? You're going to do anything first to maybe temporize or
Oh, of course, in
optimizer?
The midst of an acute flare, of course, you have to temporize that.
Jessica?
Well, to be a little bit controversial, so I would admit the patient first. I'd put in a Dapoff feeding tube and also work on alcohol cessation with them first and ensure there's tobacco cessation prior to doing any of this and try to improve their nutrition. Based on the bilirubin, if it doesn't come down, she may need an ERCP preoperatively just to kind of evaluate. But to me, it looked like her stomach was a little bit dilated, her bile duct was dilated as well. And so for this patient, I would go in with a plan that she may need a Whipple if it would come off the vein, or she may need some combination of a biliary bypass in combination with a drainage procedure for the pancreas, depending on what it allows.
Greg, do you want to fill him in on what might happen if she showed up in Charleston?
Did you say Greg or Marshall?
Greg.
Yeah, I mean, I think I get referred a lot of patients like this by surgeons as well as non-surgeons to do the things that I talked about in my lecture. And I think, you know, the discussion is that it's probably reasonable short term, but she needs to understand at 32 years old, it's not likely to be a permanent fix. On the other hand, some of these people may, if she does the right thing and stops drinking and smoking, she may get better without any technical interventions. So my answer is, I don't know. I need white hairs like Bill Nealon.
Well, I didn't mean to say I wouldn't address these acute issues. Of course, her nutrition is terrible and she's in the midst of an acute episode. So of course you want to let that settle down and do something that you can do with her nutrition.
Okay. So she was actively drinking and smoking and was malnourished. And so we brought her in and temporized her. Greg may not remember this, but he actually stented her. And so this is her after dual stenting. This is 2 months down the road. She's gained some weight back. She's eating. She still has pain, but is able to eat. And again, is in a better nutritional state. Thoughts now? Does anyone want to take her now for surgery? Or do you want to, she's had alcohol cessation. She says her pain's there. She's taking opioids daily. What do you think, Marshall?
I mean, I think she's heading to the operating room. I think it's just a question of when. I agree entirely with Dr. Nealon, actually. I mean, I think, you know, she's 32 years old. It's a big decision for somebody that age. I think you have to have, like I said in the beginning, you have to have a strong handle on that propensity for addiction, because if you don't, she'll end up coming back with more problems after you do the operation. I think one of the nice things about endotherapy up front is it allows you to get a handle on those things and talk to her and tell her more about what an operation is going to be like and, you know, those sorts of things. But I think when you look at her glandular morphology, I mean, she looks like she needs a fry. I mean, she's got a dilated duct in the tail, and she's got stones in the pancreatic head, and that's, as much as I like Greg, it's not going to go away.
Yeah. So I saw her at that point and offered her a fry procedure. And I don't know if you, it went through kind of quickly, but as Greg described earlier, after pancreatic duct stenting, her pancreatic duct was much smaller than it was in initial presentation. So it was probably really 5 millimeters in size. But talked to her about a fry, and she asked if I could do it robotically. And I said, probably not with a duct that small, as I found that pancreatic duct size to be problematic in to do minimally invasively if it's too small. And so she left the office and decided she was going to wait and see how her pain did. And we didn't see her for about 18 months. She had her stents pulled and then left us for about 18 months and then came in, and here's 18 months later. She came into the emergency room now with pancreatic ascites. So an acute flare with pancreatic ascites. Anyone want to comment on, Willie, you've been quiet on the end. Any comment about the management now for pancreatic ascites?
Had she been drinking? I mean, did she have another acute bout with this?
She said she'd not been.
Yeah.
My experience, pancreatic ascites is almost always a ruptured pseudocyst.
Yes.
And that gets back to my theory about the pseudocyst can be ignored if you manage the duct alone.
Okay. So you want to, what would your treatment plan be now, Bill?
I'll just mention that I have a paper, and there are several others showing three different manifestations of chronic. One is pain every day, one is intermittent acute attacks, and one is both. And so there is a place if you just have intermittent attacks, but if she's on narcotics every day still, then she's a candidate for ductal drainage. And again, the fluid in the ascites and the pseudocyst can be ignored if you do an adequate drainage. The theory is that all of that juice in the pseudocyst and in the ascites is coming from the duct. And so if you address the ductal pressures, then those things will go away.
Right, so as you said, we went ahead and had Greg help us temporize her again, and then she went for a fry procedure. Mm-hmm. And she's happily lost to follow-up. So.
Nice. Yeah, the ethanol is a troubling one. Earlier in my career, everyone was very judgmental and meritorious, so they wouldn't operate on anyone who was still drinking. Believe it or not, my data are that 50% of patients stop drinking after the operation, and you may know that rehab centers have about a 30% success rate, so the operation is actually more therapeutic with the addiction side of it as well.
I think that's a great thing to talk about, because I agree that you almost never get it totally controlled. You know, you never get patients off narcotics completely. You'd love them to be. I think you have to become comfortable as the person taking them through the operation that it is controllable and that you're making progress and that you're at a reasonable point where you're not going to see, significant recidivism. And that's not black and white. But it is hard. I think if you're a good doctor, you spend a lot of time managing those issues, and it's important to the success of the whole thing.
Absolutely. So this next case, we'll kind of change gears. This is a 17-year-old young woman who had a history of recurrent acute pancreatitis as a child, since the age of 6. She had episodic abdominal pain initially, PO intolerance, that would require hospitalization about 1 to 2 times per year over her childhood and to the 2 years prior before I met her. And then now her pain episodes were more frequent, her pain was actually chronic now, and she had prolonged episodes keeping her from school. She was a college freshman actually at Duke and having trouble with school. She had a sister, 2 aunts, and a grandmother, all with a history of pancreatitis. One aunt had died of pancreatic cancer, and she had a PRSS1 mutation, which is the gene for chronic pancreatitis, as Jessica mentioned earlier. So this is her imaging when I met her. It's a little bit fast. Let's see if I can slow that down a little bit. Sorry. I don't know if I can. Here we go. So you can see So she has a very dilated main pancreatic duct there. There it is. That's her main pancreatic duct running through the center there. There you go. That's a good shot of it. And, well, there's a static image of her coronal MRCP. So, Jessica.
I would send her to you, which is what I've done twice.
So you're saying total pancreatectomy with islet autotransplant. Does anyone want to do a drainage procedure? This is a nice, big, juicy, drainable duct.
I would.
Yeah, so PRSS1, I would do the TPIT, but if I find other, even hereditaries, that don't have the significant predisposition to carcinoma, then I do think about a drainage procedure, especially in a young person like this.
She's a young person. I mean, I
think this one would be TPIT.
Yeah, what do we know about fertility after TPIT? I mean, she's 17 years old. I would think to try to get her into her at least up to 30 would be ideal. You know, for cancer risk, she should be still fairly low for quite some time. So you're really just trying to get her feeling better at this point.
So you think fertility is affected less by a pusto than by a TPIT?
Do we know?
No.
I don't know.
But it's a laparotomy either way. I think that's interesting. Okay, this is obviously a very hot topic now, and I think in general with PRSS1 disease, the answer is a little bit easier, except for to Marshall, and to obviously a large number of people. But when you get into the other hereditary diseases, as Dr. Nealon has alluded to, we have no idea what the natural history of those diseases are. And
I think you're getting to my own bias. I mean, to have, you know, 16 years old having islets infused into that liver, you know, I don't think we know. I mean, we know a lot about it by now, but I don't know. I would probably, and again, I understand the genetic predisposition, but I would probably do something short of that or try to wait a while for her.
All right, and then here's another case. This is,
I
would do TPIT, yes. I think the problem with that is the genetic predisposition. So you know that the natural history of the disease is that they're going to have progressive disease. And so I think you're looking at something else down the road for them.
Me too.
If you don't do it from the outset. So this is another alcoholic gentleman. He was in his late 50s, and the CT here, he came in with acute pancreatitis from alcohol with necrosis. And we did a nice laparoscopic transgastric necrosectomy on him. And it was a raging success. He went home and just a few days bounced back off pain medicine, nutritionally happy, and back to his normal life, like so many patients with this. But he actually did very well. But then 6 months later, he came in to see me with nonspecific abdominal pain. And this is his CT scan. Any thoughts from the panel?
I've written way too much about this, but I would get an MRI, MRCP. I suspect a ductal injury, and then if you see a ductal injury, I have some data on saying you can do something with what I call the disconnected segment of the pancreas, assuming it's a complete disconnection. And Greg's already mentioned this. If it's a stricture, then I think the endoscopic would be the right answer if this is a ductal injury and it's just a stricture. What do you think, Greg?
Yeah, I'm not sure the MRCP would ever change your decision to go to ERCP on this patient, so I think that's what I would do without the MRCP at this point.
I don't disagree. I actually do ERCP, but now it's frowned upon to do a diagnostic ERCP.
Well, it's not diagnostic. It's diagnostic, but therapeutic at the same time. You have a clear, you know, pathologic issue there and now recurrence, so you know that at a minimum is an incomplete disruption.
I couldn't agree with you more, actually. If you can go to ERCP first and get them to do it, that's the right answer. You're wasting your time with MRCP.
So he had an MRCP and an ERCP, and the ERCP showed that he had an abrupt duct cut off right at the neck at the genu, and so this was a disconnected left pancreatic remnant. Greg, what do you think? Would you want to manage this endoscopically?
Anything that we're going to do for a complete duct disconnection right now is kind of well down the beaten path, and so if he's a good operative candidate and he's young, I think he was in his early 50s, I would favor a surgical repair of that.
Would somebody like to comment, maybe Jessica, on what Greg means by a surgical repair? What are our options, you think?
I think that can be varied. What I traditionally do in these patients, if ERCP has failed or you can't get across it, or if stenting has failed or is not amenable to that, but particularly for these patients, what I'll end up doing is going in, and what I found is that most often they do well with a distal pancreatectomy, splenectomy, which is a bloody mess, but they eventually get much better.
Anyone else have any thoughts?
I think that probably is the traditional answer. I have written quite a lot about doing a ductal drainage to the body tail, if I can do it. The three choices are draining a fluid collection, if you have a fluid collection, draining the duct, or doing a distal. The distal is a bloody mess, so the study as I've done has shown a higher, longer hospitalization, a higher risk of a pancreatic fistula, higher risk of a transfusion, and it's just a war zone in the left upper quadrant. If I can get to the duct, I prefer that. I was saying that the number two choice would be the cyst, but I find cyst patients come back and with recurrent pain and recurrent even pancreatitis. And I'm worried that the connection between the pancreatic duct and that cyst may be microscopic, and for that reason, it's the equivalent of a stricture of the duct causing some irritation of the pancreas. But if I can, I would do a drainage of the duct in the body tail. If not, it's a distal.
Will, any role to do a distal and to save the islets on that patient? There's a lot of healthy parenchyma there.
Yeah, I think in cases like this where it's a very clear sort of ischemic injury to the neck during the initial acute pancreatitis with necrosis, and you have essentially a viable left-sided gland without any abnormality, which it looks like this patient, for the most part, the body and tail of the gland is well perfused, looks healthy, you can consider islet autotransplantation in these patients because the distal pancreatectomy for this disease with a disconnected left pancreatic remnant has a diabetes risk of about 25%. But it depends on the health of the left-sided pancreas. If the left-sided pancreas is atrophic or necrotic, then I don't think there's a role for it in that situation.
Great. All right. Let's see, we have a few minutes left. Yeah, we have 1 minute left. All right, I think maybe we'll just conclude with that. Thank you so much for being here. We've really enjoyed it. This is a wonderful panel, so let's give it up for them. Thank you.